their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado, this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And I heard you missed us. We're back after a little week in the field. For good reasons, we were off last week.
Yeah, we had fun.
All the best reasons. It was so great to get back. So many firsts. It was our first time doing a photo safari. For me, since August of last year, and that was not the same. It was our first time on an airplane in over a year, traveling. So we're going to talk about some of that experience that we have. This is our first time really getting back behind our cameras in a serious way in quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, we'd both been doing lots of, you know, more casual shooting, but it is different. It is different.
And first time being able to be joined by clients in a really long time, and that was just almost the best part of this whole thing was having other people to share the experience with. Photography is a solo sport, but you know, it's good with others.
Absolutely. A lot more fun, I think. And then we'll also talk a little bit about just like a 2-month shooting experience thing with the Fuji GFX 100S that we talked about a while ago. It is what I took on this trip, so I'll just talk about my thoughts on it.
That's the 100 pixel medium format mirrorless Fuji for.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. I don't always keep the model number straight. So just
kind of complicated name.
Yeah. So large format, lots of pixels, lots of megapixels. That's awesome. Or not large format, medium format.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I mean, I guess we can start off by just saying that, you know, we went to Oregon. We flew from Denver to Portland. My dad accompanied me on the trip, which was always fun. So we had a little family angle there. It was the first time he'd been out in over a year. I mean, he's just been, you know, or not out, but like, you know, doing this kind of stuff. And I will say, you know, we were traveling on Mother's Day weekend. I wouldn't say the airport was empty. It wasn't packed, but it was fairly busy. At least some of the gates seemed that, but it was casual.
It seemed fine.
Yeah.
All of us were vaccinated, but I didn't feel unsafe or anything. I didn't see people behaving poorly or anything like that. So at least based on that experience, I think if you're vaccinated and you adhere to the practices in the airport and on the airplane and stuff, which still require masks, I think you can feel pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think the risk amount is high. I think there are plenty of other things that you probably do in your daily life that are at least as high of risk. Mm-hmm. So it felt fine to me.
Yeah. I mean, same here. I mean, and frankly, with the more recent data that's starting to come out, you know, on you know, effectiveness of all of the COVID vaccines. I mean, frankly, it's starting to sound like if you're vaccinated, you're really protected. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and especially if you're going to wear a mask on top of it, you're really pretty darn safe. And masks are required on pretty much every flight that I've ever seen. So you'll have to check your airline. They will send you, like, I've got a trip coming up, and the airline will email you and say, this is what to expect at the airport, and you are required to wear a mask in the airport, unless you're actively drinking or eating something. And on the plane, it is an absolute requirement, and the flight attendants will come and tell you, put your mask on over your nose and mouth. So that is what to expect. And
I think for anyone traveling relatively soon, whether you're traveling by plane or by car into another state, or if it's a state that has a tremendous amount of variance between counties, do the research, you know, get on the state public health websites, et cetera, and look at what the current requirements are, you know, and guidelines for where you're going, because they vary a lot. And you know, in the case of Oregon, they had they were on a pretty good trajectory. Then shortly before we left, they buttoned down a bit. And then pretty quickly after that buttoning down, they loosened up dramatically. It was a little mm-hmm. bit of a seesaw thing, but you know, while we were there, they relaxed the requirements for masking outdoors, you know, like on city streets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Lots of people were still using them. But you really want to stay on top of that and understand the environment that you're going into. And
right.
you know, one of our favorite places to travel to and go shoot, you know, New Mexico is still very buttoned down. You know, we were looking at the state website there this morning, and you know, they right. don't really even talk about vaccine status as being a factor in terms of what people right. who are traveling there should take into account. So
they are still recommending quarantine there. I think that's a bit strong in my opinion, but that's what they do. So you have to look at the state. You know, the good news is
and
that
we're not public health people.
Right. And I don't know what's going on in each state. The good news is though that, you know, if you're vaccinated, traveling is going to be pretty darn safe, because the risk to you, they just keep finding out more and more that the risk is extremely low and it looks really good. So if you have that status where you're 2 weeks past your second shot or whatever, depending on which flavor you get, you're good. And I don't have any hesitation right now to get on an airplane. I mean, at least in my world. And I've been yeah. very cautious about this whole year. You know, it's yeah. just like, you know, I mean,
both of us have been good, but I think you've been a little bit more cautious even. But I would agree with
yeah.
you.
Yeah, I mean, and everyone's circumstance is different. I mean, if you've got kids in your household who can't get vaccinated, or you know, or whatever, you know, it depends on your circumstance. But I think if you are, and it was also nice for us because we had, you know, we're sitting in a row of three seats, right? But there was three of us. We knew we were all vaccinated.
Yeah.
There was no honor system necessary there. We knew our status, and so that was yeah. that was really great. But you know, hey, I'm going to fly again. I'm finally going out to visit my grandmother in Los Angeles for the first time since 2019. So I'm really glad, you know, that I can do that. I feel good about doing that. So,
yeah.
Whereas a year ago, that wouldn't have happened. So anyway, but then we had a really great time. So we started off in Portland, and we stayed out near the Columbia River Gorge, and we did a little shooting on the front end, and then we met our clients and we took them out the first night for a little warm-up shoot. We actually had a really great sunset, or maybe not a sunset in the traditional sense, but the light was wonderful. We had just
spilling down the gorge, and
yeah, yeah,
we were at a cool. nice elevated spot. It was quite cool.
And then we moved on,
and then we did lots of waterfalls and stuff like mm-hmm. that, and then moved on to the coast and a lot of typical coastline kind of shots. Had some nice fog and mist at times, which personally I like shooting in. You know, you can't shoot the same subjects, but it's
right.
I think it's a lot of fun.
It yeah. makes for a challenge. And I think what we both discovered, we were talking about this, but I think what we both discovered is that it takes a little while to get back in your groove after you haven't been doing serious photography. Mm-hmm. And whether it was, and I honestly think that the photo safari experience, not just for people attending, but for us too, is that it allows us to spend 3, 4, or in this case, 5 days behind your camera, where that's all you're really thinking about is your camera stuff, your composition, your photography, maybe your computer things, but you know, it really helps you immerse and focus on getting those skills refined again. Because, you know, you told me, like, I think my composition is a little rusty right now.
Well,
you know,
it's
true.
You know, I absolutely came away with images that I like. And you've got some really nice ones as well. But I wasn't realizing it at the time I was shooting. It was more like when I downloaded them, and mm-hmm. I was just making shots that I wouldn't have in the past. And it was just rust
yeah.
on my brain or whatever. You know how it is. You develop some skills in terms of recognize what works and what doesn't work. And it's not an easy thing to learn, but that was the thing that felt a little bit rusty. So it was great to get out there and do things that, you know, remove that layer of rust.
Yeah, I mean, in whatever context, I mean, it's funny because through leading the photo safari or workshop or whatever we're doing, it helps us too, because we get you. It's different than just going somewhere by yourself, because I think you tend to. I think the group setting, you know, we said photography is an individual, you know, it's not a spectator sport. It's sort of an individual activity, but the group setting has some real merits. Just being in that group, it forces you to do things that you might cut corners on if you're out there yourself. I don't want to wake up early today. I don't want to stay out late. You know, I mean, you're with the group and there's a sort of a group inertia that, you know, it's like, okay, I signed up for this. Maybe you paid for this. You know, it's something that you need to do.
Some of it can be as simple as because others are there and you really can't leave until everyone leaves, or at least it feels awkward. You're more likely to work a location well.
Yes.
And really get those creative juices going. Whereas if you're just by yourself, it can sometimes be a little bit too tempting to get the obvious shots and just simply move on.
Right.
Prematurely.
And one of the things that we like about when we lead these tours or these safaris is that most of the time, other than some initial ideas when we get to a location, most of the time we just let our clients roam free and do what they want to do, knowing that we're around to be asked, you know, that we're there shooting to ask questions from, you know, we never tell people this is where you put your tripod and here's your shot. And
personally,
it forces you
that.
To look for those. Yeah, me too. But
I don't like being told those kind of things.
If it forces you to struggle to find the compositions. And I'll tell you, when you're in a forested area, I think that's one of the hardest places to shoot. And we did some of that shooting both in the gorge and also on the coast, you know, in some forested areas, mm-hmm. like you mentioned with the fog. It's really can be a struggle. So looking for that is a growth experience, but knowing that, we were all working through it, but knowing that you've got group leaders there to help you put you in the right direction without telling you how to make your photograph, because it should be your photograph, right? I mean, I think that's, I don't ever want to go on a trip where I'm taking somebody else's picture.
Right.
Like, I think my clients should take their own picture. I'm happy to help them set things up and offer them ways to improve it. But I'm not going to say, here's your shot. This is the thing. Anyway, it was really fun. And then we had the infrared class back in Portland on the back end after stopping for ice cream at Tillamook. It was good.
Excellent.
I think you had, what kind did you get?
Marionberry.
I had the Oregon Dark Cherry.
Both fine choices.
And my dad, I think, had Huckleberry, which was a good one too. You're in Oregon, you got to do those berries and fruits.
Those are all good Oregon flavors.
Exactly. So it was fun. And then, so we'll switch over. Now, you were shooting this Fuji. This was probably the first time you'd gone out with the new Fuji in a serious shoot, kind of
more serious. The
multiple day thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And worked great. I'm happy with it. You know, it's not like there's something that I talked about before that I would view as invalid. But, you know, a couple of quick thoughts. You know, the lenses are bigger. The overall system is heavier than full frame or APS-C cameras, but it's not bad. I mean, I compared weights of what I would have taken in the past using the D850 to what I took on this trip, which was a 23 millimeter, a 32-64, and a 100-200 zoom. And it's virtually identical. And it wasn't painful to carry around or anything. I wasn't feeling like I was dying under the weight of my backpack. Right. Far from
it. It had some heft. I mean, you let me hold it. It had some heft.
Yeah, but it's lighter. Terrible. The camera itself is lighter than a D850. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, smaller in size. So it's not bad. It's very pleasant to use. You know, 102 megapixels, you can get a lot of detail. However, you know, when your environmental conditions are challenging, meaning any kind of breezes or wind or things like that, those are all things that, lessen that advantage of the resolution, quickly. So you just have to realize that, the times where you really hit that full resolution may be fewer than you realize. So it's just something to think about. But it's an extraordinarily pleasant camera and system to use. It really is. It has a lot of very nice, very thoughtful features. There's just not a lot bad about it, I can say, but that at all. I'm happy with it. But like I said initially, it's not something I would evangelize for others. You either kind of know that you would like shooting with something like that, would enjoy it, or you shouldn't get it. The difference between full frame and it is not that huge. It's nice, but it's not that huge in reality. So
Right. I
trying
mean,
to
I
think
think.
what else. About the only other thing I would say, and this was a little bit of a tip I had to remind myself, this is part of the rust. With the 100 to 200 millimeter lens, at times I was shooting, longer exposures with it, quite often on a tripod. And in retrospect, one of the things I really probably should have done is, and this was just being forgetful, is a little trick about putting a little bit of weight on the lens barrel to stabilize it. Because at times I think there was a little bit of a breeze hitting it and, throwing some of the results into an unsharp direction.
Right. I mean, it's definitely a tripod kind of camera for
Not.
the most, well, for what we were,
No.
when you're talking about that resolution, in the windy conditions, we weren't,
I would
I
say
mean, not, I didn't mean you
it
can't handhold it. I'm saying that it was, this was a
was
tripod kind of trip.
solely because of the shooting I was doing, which would have been true if I was using an Nikon Z7 too. It's just as easy to handhold as a, in my opinion, as a Z camera or anything. It's got IBIS. It's comfortable to hold. Yeah.
I think
But
you
I've
notice
handheld it a bunch
small. Yeah,
in
I
other
guess what I'm saying is
circumstances.
I noticed too just slight jiggles in motion when we were
Yeah.
getting into this. Even with the tripod, you need to still stabilize
Yes.
that, and that's what I was kind of referring to.
Yeah, that wasn't really unique to the camera. It was
No.
just one of those things that I w had been in the habit of doing in the past and kind of forgot.
Yeah.
So, anyway, all the
Oh, it's
more
all
reason
good.
to do dress rehearsals that resemble
Right.
what you're going to do. So I
Now
still like it.
we had a fun trip. I mean, we got to see a lot of spots. I mean, Astoria, we had bluebird clear skies at the bridge in Astoria, but it makes for good black and whites. And so, I mean, that's one of the things you can do. I actually shot a little infrared, and I brought solid ND filters that work with infrared that I picked up last year. And I just, again, I haven't really had a lot of opportunities to shoot them. And it was kind of fun for smoothing out the ripples in the waves under the, there's all these old pier pilings and they just pop white in infrared because they're covered in algae from the high tide. And that green just screams back white at you in infrared. It's a different look altogether than what I got from the visible light converted to monochrome. So it's kind of, and water gets dark with infrared too. So it's just a different thing. But mostly we were just using polarizers on this trip to get stuff because like the waterfalls were fast moving water. So
But it is super important to use polarizers in those situations. The way the photos look is just so different. They look too glary and lacking in color saturation if you don't use the polarizers.
yeah,
So
and
I view them as almost mandatory.
they can be really tricky to set in the field when you're not shooting a blue sky. And when you had to, but when I was rotating my polarizer out, all of a sudden I would see the foliage go dark green. You know,
Yeah.
the saturation would pop out. And that's something that you cannot do without a polarizer because what you'll get is the white glare reflecting off of, the leaves or whatever. And
Wet rocks.
yeah, wet rocks, same thing. You cannot get that effect really in post because you're dealing with a completely different color and brightness range. You're not getting greens, you're getting white. So the polarizer is mandatory there.
Yeah, and these are shots with no sky in them. So it has nothing to do with the sky. It's all about the vegetation and rocks and getting nice color saturation.
Absolutely. So it's why a polarizer is still to this day one of our most highly important, you know, whether you end up using it or not might depend on your location, but I can tell you, I always put a polarizer in my bag just for that. I just don't necessarily need them as often for traditional landscapes as I might have with film, where it was more of a contrast enhancer.
Now, one thing that we should mention, because we've got another workshop coming up in July in Crested Butte, Colorado, which will be for
instructional photo safari, Rick. It's an instructional photo safari.
Yeah,
it's kind of a workshop, but there's not a lot of work. There's not a lot of work for the participants involved.
No, it's just fun and social stuff and getting some good photos. But we're going to do a webinar for people who are interested in that. We'll do that on the 29th. You should be able to see information about registering for that and via our Facebook website and your own websites. And if you want to rattle off those.
Yeah. Well, I mean, our Facebook.com/imagedoctors is where you can always find our stuff. And then if you go to my website, luminescentphoto.com, there'll be links there. It will be free, of course. It will require a ticket because our capacity is limited somewhat. So if you want to view it, we'll make it available offline as well when it's done. But if you want to be able to ask us questions about the upcoming photo tour in Crested Butte, Colorado, where the emphasis will be on the wildflowers and generally macro photography, but not entirely. It'll be a good opportunity to learn things like focus stacking and that kind of, you know, things that we might do both in a macro as well as a landscape kind of context. So it's a great place, and it's very easily accessible by car. You don't need anything fancy to, you know, you don't need the Jeep to get there. So it's one of our favorite spots. So if you're interested in that, you can watch that. Or if you have a question and you want to sign up for the workshop, that's also listed on our website and my website. Photo Safari. But our photo tour. Or just drop us a line. Contact us on Facebook or via email, and it's all good. We would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
It's a beautiful spot.
It really is.
We've been there a bunch of times, and it's just always great.
And
so we hope you'll join us.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, well, until next time, happy shooting. We'll see you.
All right, bye-bye.